Life's better with American Family Insurance because our home policies help protect your dreams and come with peace of mind. Save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at amfam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Hey, what is up, everyone? Welcome to the Crack House Chronicles. I am Donnie, your host, and with me is a man that says all this cold weather is interfering with his flagpole licking. It's Dale.
What's going on, man?
Hey, bud, how are you?
I am wonderful.
Good, good. It's 2021, bud.
I know it. I'm ready. We are back. I was going to say back in the crack.
We are back in the house. Yeah. Had a good little vacation, had some Christmas time off, had New Year's off, and...
We stretched it out a little bit further than we wanted to, but here we are, and we're ready to rock. We're gonna kick some ass this year, I think.
Yeah, we're gonna do some good stuff.
Yeah.
All right, bud, you got any shout outs for us?
Yeah, I got one. We'll give a shout out to Heidi Pierce, because she said we were rad.
Rad.
That's cool.
I have never been called rad.
Well, you have now. We are rad.
What does rad mean? What is that short for? Is that for radical? Or just
I don't rad? Know. That's cool, man. We're rad.
We are rad.
We get the skateboard out.
Hang 10, man.
Yeah.
No, that's surfing, isn't it?
Mr. Hand.
Yeah. Yeah. We just learned about Cuba and having some food.
Speaking of, where's old boy? Have you talked to him lately?
Our Puerto Rican guy?
Yeah.
Ben Richardson?
Ben,
I hadn't heard from you. I know you're going to listen to this, and I hope you're okay down there in Puerto Rico land. Give us a holler, bud.
Yeah, where are you? Ben.
Ben. That's it. Yeah, I thought about it another day and started to text him, but... I hadn't heard from him, so maybe he'll listen to this. Maybe I'll bet you he'll listen to this and he'll call us.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's good. We miss old Ben.
That's it. All right.
We better get started. Somebody's going to cry because we've been talking for 2 minutes. We ain't started yet.
Yeah, that's it.
We don't care to do
it. But I'm gonna throw this in here, too. Before we get started, I want to remind everybody to check us out on whatever platform you listen to, Apple Podcasts. Please rate and review. Give that 5-star rating and review.
Yeah, somebody. I'm like, come on.
It helps. It really does. And check out our store page on our website. Get you some merch, t-shirt, mug, stickers, whatever.
Whatever.
Yeah, buy something. Help support the crack house. Yeah. Or just throw in some gas money there. Click the donate button and help us out.
Whatever you do, we appreciate it. If it's just send us a comment or something nice on YouTube or on our Facebook page or Instagram, we ain't greedy. We like that, too.
That's it. All right, Dale, we're going to get into our case this week.
Let's roll, Donnie.
All right. This is the disappearance of Jennifer Kissy.
Kissy.
Yeah, and it was a pretty high-profile case back when she disappeared, but we're going to cover it, and hopefully maybe somebody down the road will listen to us and help find out what happened to this girl.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, it is coming up on the anniversary, so it's good to keep her in the news, man.
Exactly. She was born Jennifer Joyce Kissy on May the 20th, 1981, and she was born in New Jersey to parents Drew and Joyce Kissy. And she has a younger brother named Logan. Yep. But they moved to Florida sometime when Jennifer was younger.
Right.
I don't know the exact time, but she spent most of her life in Florida.
Yeah.
And she was a graduate of Vivian Gaither High School in Tampa, Florida. And she attended University of Central Florida in Orlando and graduated in 2003 with a degree in finance.
Right.
And I'd heard that she even was pre-med at one time.
Yeah.
But changed her major to finance.
Yeah, one of her friends said she was really smart, and when she decided to change her major, everybody was kind of shocked, but she had a plan and knew what she wanted to do, and she was going to make it happen.
Yeah, and yeah, like I said, very, very smart, because she'd got a job working at Central Florida Investments, and this was a timeshare company in Ocoee, and she was a finance manager.
Yeah, she even had interned there and then ended up turning into a full-time job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They saw her potential.
Right. Apparently so, because she moved up very quick.
Yep. Yeah.
So. She was making some bank, too, I'd say.
Yep. Because she had bought a condo.
Yeah, $200-something thousand condo.
Yeah, 24 years old.
Right.
So, yeah, she was banking some money. Jennifer moved into her condo at Mosaic Millennium at the end of November 2005. And it was the Building 22, Unit 2226.
Correct.
And, Dale, this complex was a major undertaking. It was still under construction.
Yeah, they were taking, it was actually apartments, and they were taking them and then converting them all into condos.
Yeah. Workers coming and going all the time.
All the time.
Yep.
Yeah, I think less than half the units were even done or occupied.
And it's been reported that a lot of these workers that were there were illegal aliens.
Yeah.
And the security there was very lax. Even the gate going into the complex was always open.
Yeah. Now, they did have a guard, but he was supposed to, keep track of vehicles and tags and this kind of stuff. But they said about 75%. Maybe he did, maybe he didn't.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, it was very lax, really, yeah, for what it should be.
Well, good. And even
with this major undertaking, you know, it's constantly in and out, I would think.
And some of these apartments and condos were vacant, and they allowed some of the workers to stay in them while they were working there.
Right.
That wasn't good at all.
No, it's kind of weird, actually.
Now, the weekend before Jennifer vanished, she had vacationed with her boyfriend, Rob Allen, in St. Croix, U.S. Virgin Islands.
Yeah, they wanted to get away for a short, like a little holiday. And I think her boyfriend knew somebody who had a place down in St. Croix, so they flew down there.
Mm-hmm.
It was, you know, a lot of people say they went on a cruise, but there was no cruise. They actually flew into St. Croix.
Yep. And spent a weekend there.
Correct.
And while Jennifer was in St. Croix, her younger brother, Logan, and a couple of his friends stayed at her apartment for the weekend. Well, him and another one. Then another one came up and just partied with him that weekend and left. But
yeah, the other guy left. He only lived about 30 minutes up the road. So
yeah, one of them was Travis and another one was Matt. And they were good friends of Logan's. And Matt is actually an ex-boyfriend of Jennifer.
Right.
And they dated for a while, but they broke things off, and I'd heard too that he took the breakup pretty hard.
Yeah, he wasn't very happy about it.
No,
and tried really hard to get back with her, but she was done. I think I don't really know what the details was, but I'm sure she was done with it.
Yep. But at the time of Jennifer's disappearance, I think he had moved on and then started dating somebody else.
Yeah, he had.
Yep. But he still remained friends with Jennifer's brother Logan.
Yeah.
Yep. They're getting ready to leave St. Croix. Her and Rob, and their flight is canceled, and they have to fly into Miami.
Yep.
And one of Rob's good friends picks them up in Miami and takes them back to Fort Lauderdale. And she stays overnight at Rob's place and then gets up the next morning and drives directly to work.
Right.
Which was, I guess, about a two-hour drive.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, so she works all day, and then she goes home that evening.
She's probably pretty wore out, wasn't she?
Yep. And that evening on the way home, she spoke to her parents, and she also spoke to her brother Logan.
Right.
And he said everything was normal, and she even told him about her trip, and she seemed happy. And she even spoke to Logan's friend, Travis, about shipping his cell phone back to him because he had left it there in her apartment.
Yeah, he said he had left his phone, and then he needed it for work, wondered if she could ship it to him.
Yeah. And
that wouldn't fly today, would it?
No,
I'm driving back up there to get my
phone. I'm driving 3 days to get my phone. I mean, that's what it would be today.
Yeah, I think they lived, it was a couple hours away, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, that night, this was on Monday, January the 23rd, 2006. It was about 10 o'clock p.m. Jennifer called her boyfriend, Rob.
Right.
And Jennifer told him she was in bed and she was tired from the vacation and had a long day at work.
Right.
And they talked briefly. And I'd even heard it
a little spat
discussed in other places that they weren't getting along too well. And one of the reasons was they were wanting to move on, you know, and in their relationship, but they couldn't decide on who wanted to move in with who.
Neither one of them wanted to move is what it was. They were in a long-distance relationship because he lived several hours away. And it was kind of one of those things where it worked for a while, and they were end up, what they would do is take turns on the weekends. Either she would go down there or he would come up to her place. And they'd been doing that, you know, because she'd lived there for 2 months or so, and that's what they'd been doing. But I think they were trying to figure out a way to
make it work.
And neither one of them really wanted to move, so they had some kind of little discussion about that.
Yeah. And, yeah, it was almost like a little spat, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, probably nothing major. It was just, you know.
But they both said they missed each other and were looking forward to the next time they were going to spend time with each other.
Right.
But I think it ended pretty good. The conversation, according to Rob, ended pretty good.
Yeah.
Now, on Tuesday, January the 24th, 2006, this was the next day, Jennifer was supposed to have a meeting at work, big meeting, around 11 o'clock.
11 o'clock, yeah.
And she usually gets up and gets to work. It's usually around 7:30 to 7:45 is when she usually leaves work. And this was about 13 miles or 16 minutes driving time, but she was going plan on leaving a little earlier so she could drop that phone off and mail it or whatever she needed to do. But she didn't show up to work that day.
Nope. Which is really, 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 really odd for her.
Because her employer said that she was one to be always on time and always be at work. And if she didn't, she would call.
Right.
She was one to let somebody know where she's at. And she was very close to her parents and her brother, and they knew about what she did. Yes. And where she was at all times. Yeah. She was very open with them anyway. And since Jennifer didn't show up at that meeting, one of the supervisors that worked called her parents.
Well, they had called her. They tried to call her and hadn't heard from nothing. And then they called her her cell phone and went straight to voicemail.
Which is unusual.
And called her landline. And it's because she said, her cell phone didn't work that well at home, which is kind of like mine. So they called her landline, couldn't get a hold of her there. And when she hadn't showed up 3 hours later, they looked on her emergency contact, which was her parents' number. And they decided to call her.
Yes.
Or call her mom.
It said Jennifer's cell signal there in her apartment condo was even so bad that she actually had to go out on the balcony to talk on the phone.
Yeah.
Now, on Jennifer's floor, only two out of the four condos were occupied, and her neighbor was not in town. Now, Jennifer's dad, Drew, said that every Tuesday, landscapers worked on the condo complex near Jennifer's parking space. And the landscaper said they didn't see Jennifer leaving her apartment and getting into a car, which she did every weekday morning between 7:30 and 7:45. But this particular morning, Rob was running a little late for work, so he called Jennifer on his way to work, but it went straight to voicemail.
Yeah, everything's odd.
Yeah.
And then this is when her dad actually called the condo manager, right?
Yeah,
he did. And asked him to go down and knock on the door and see if her car was in her parking spot.
Yep. And her car was not there.
Was not in the spot.
Nope.
So they immediately jumped in their cars, and I want to say it was a 3-hour drive, but I could be off on that. But they immediately jumped in their car to go see what was going on because they knew something
was up.
Yeah.
And they get there, and
it was a 2-hour drive. I'm sorry.
2-hour drive to Jennifer's apartment from where they lived.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. I think they lived in Bradenton, Florida. And around 3 p.m. while driving to Orlando, Jennifer's mother called the condominium complex and asked if they could send some management or something to check out Jennifer's condo, to be able to go in there.
Right.
And two condo managers went over to Jennifer's place, and Jennifer's car was not in her space. And the management entered Jennifer's condo, and the door had been locked and nothing was disturbed.
Right.
That's what they told Jennifer's mother, Joyce.
Yeah, and I think her brother and his friend showed up right around 3 o'clock, and then they got there around 3:15, she said.
Yeah.
So they was hammered down.
Yeah, they were getting there to find out. And when they get in there to Jennifer's apartment, there was nothing seemed out of place in her condo. Her makeup was on the counter, her hair dryer, and what Jennifer wore to bed that night was on the bathroom floor. The bed was not made. And a couple of her outfits were laid on the bed,
right?
Which she normally did. She put out outfits.
Yeah, she said that her mom had said that she had talked to her about these shoes that she was going to wear the next day that she was looking forward to wearing.
Nine West.
Yes. And she said that those outfits would have matched those shoes. Apparently she had a third one, I guess, that she finally decided to go with.
Yep.
But everything else looked pretty ordinary. They said, there was a wet towel, like where she had taken a shower. So it was like a damp towel. And then her mom even went in and checked. It looked in the shower to see, and there was like some water puddled up behind the shampoo bottles and stuff. So it looked like she had taken a shower that morning. Mm-hmm. She said that she definitely was a morning shower girl before she goes to work.
Yeah.
Instead of taking it at night.
Mm-hmm.
So everything seemed to be open up.
And there seemed to be no signs of forced entry, no sign of struggle.
No, nothing.
And Jennifer's luggage was still in the front hall from her trip.
And since she got home and then drove straight from Rob's to work, when she got home, she probably just dropped it in the hallway. It's like, the hell, I'm tired. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
So everything looked like she had got up and got ready to go to work. And the only things that was missing was her cell phone, her keys, and like her briefcase that she took to work.
Yeah, and I think she had an iPod that was missing too.
And her iPod.
Yep. But on the counter, they found her pepper spray.
Yeah.
And which was kind of odd, but then they didn't think it was too odd because they realized or thought that maybe she couldn't take it on the plane.
Right. So she probably took it off her key ring and then just hadn't put it back on.
Just left it at the department so she wouldn't have to go through a hassle at the airport with the pepper spray.
Correct.
Yep. Now, shortly after this, Jennifer's parents notify the police after not finding her there at her apartment. And the deputies even said that she probably had a meltdown or a fight with her boyfriend and she'll be back.
Right. Just blew it up.
And they just left. And somewhere around 5 p.m., the construction workers there at the Mosaic Millennium finished their work for the day. And they left. But see, Jennifer's parents, Joyce and Drew, they got into action quick.
Oh, yeah. By 5 o'clock, from like 5 to 7, you know, they was already out. They had already made flyers and pushing, distributing flyers around and looking as if you had seen this girl. And
yeah.
They were on the ball.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, these people, or her parents, are go-getters.
Yes.
And the detectives checked for activity on her ATM card and pinged her cell phone to try to find this location. There was no response. Nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Police Sergeant Roger Brennan says they entered her into a system of missing persons and issued an alert for both Jennifer and her car. And they issued a BOLO report around 9 p.m. And police could not search all of Jennifer's units complex because many of them were privately owned.
Right.
Now, the next morning, January the 25th, it was rumored that half of the Mosaic Millennium work crew disappeared in the days after Jennifer's disappearance.
Well, I'm sure with the strong police presence, I'm sure a lot of them didn't want to go to work.
And this is per a comment by Jennifer's dad, Drew, in an interview he gave,
yeah,
that a lot of these workers had just disappeared. On Thursday, this was 2 days later, January the 26th, around 8:10 p.m., there's another apartment complex, which is about a mile and a half away, called Huntington on the Green.
Yeah.
And there was a woman there that noticed Jennifer's car in the parking lot after seeing it on the news and called the police.
Right. And this is a pretty shady...
Yeah, it's not a great place.
This is not nowhere near where she lived.
No.
I mean, it's near distance-wise, but it's a pretty shady complex.
Just keep in mind, this whole area is still kind of shady, and they're trying to turn it around and make something nice out of it.
Right.
So, but like Dale said, this, you know, where they found her car was not a nice part of town.
Well, they said, you know, there's a lot of drug activity, and then it always found it was a place a lot of people dropped off stolen cars and just that kind of activity going on around this place.
Yeah. And they did notice the amount of gas that was in Jennifer's car.
Yeah, which is kind of weird to me. But
yeah, it seemed to indicate that her car wasn't driven very far at all.
Right. They just, basically they figured up if she filled it up before she left Rob's Monday.
Yeah.
And then drove all the way home, then to work, then back home, and then tried to figure out how much gas would be left, try to figure out how far the car had traveled since then.
Yeah. And Jennifer's car was a 2004 Chevy Malibu.
Black.
Yep.
Yep.
Black in color. But when they found her car, the doors were locked and the keys were not found.
Right.
And Jennifer had a DVD player that was found in the back seat, and it was unknown whether she had it in her car for some reason, but already detectives, you know, didn't think it was any kind of robbery or anything like that.
I'd heard Rob had given it to her, and she said had it strapped in the back, in the seatbelt in the back seat. So I'm assuming she had just left it in there from when he had given it to her and didn't ever take it in the house.
Yep.
So pretty much shows that robbery is not a motive here in this.
Yep.
Because nothing was missing from her house, and then this stuff still in her car.
Yeah.
Now, when they did find the car, they did call Rob.
Yeah.
And they had Rob come up.
Yeah, right before they opened the car.
Yeah, which is weird to me.
Well, I think I've heard, too, they wanted to see his reaction in case they found something.
Right. So, I guess, I mean, you know, call him up, and I'm like, he said he was stumbling, was just rolling, because he didn't know, and he just called and said, hey, we found our car, and he's like, okay, good, and he's like, can you come up? Okay. But that's what it was. I guess they were wanting to see his reaction when they opened the trunk. But, hell, can you imagine if she was in there and you didn't have nothing to do with it?
Yeah.
I mean, and plus, I guess they could question him right there without giving him time to think up some answers or something if he had done it. But,
yeah.
But it's still kind of odd to me that they would call him out there to, hey, watch this to me.
Yeah, they wanted to see his reaction, whether she was in there or whether she wasn't.
Right.
They wanted just to see him, see what I guess his old demeanor around the car.
I guess they ain't doing nothing else.
I guess, man, that's some crazy law enforcement. But I get it. I mean, I get that you know, want to see his reaction, especially if she's in there.
Right, but she wasn't.
No. So. No sign of Jennifer at all.
Spoiler alert.
The law enforcement did do a door-to-door knock and talk with people and didn't find anything.
Nobody seen anything.
And they did track with some bloodhounds from Jennifer's car to Huntington on the Green.
Now, this is pretty wild.
Yeah.
Well, from Huntington on the Green to
Mosaic Millennium.
Yeah.
Which is a little over a mile away.
But it's kind of tricky because the bloodhound follows the trail out of the car and then, I guess, down the road and down the sidewalk, but then it cuts through a hole in the fence.
Yeah.
Which is, to me, is a telltale sign of what's going on here.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's just kind of weird. It didn't go up and it didn't go through the gate and it didn't go through any other normal entryway. There was just a place in the fence. And I'm assuming not everybody would know about.
Yeah.
I don't know. I haven't seen a picture of this. I don't know how big the hole in the fence was. I don't know if it was part of the fence missing or if it was like a, you know, piece of it leaned back or what. But to me, it sounds like it would be something that not everyone would know about.
Yeah. And it said the bloodhound entered the grounds and the dog picked up scent inside the fence and went directly to the staircase leading to Jennifer's second floor condominium.
Right.
And there was another note, another report that said...
And then it stopped right there, right?
Yep.
Yep.
And there was another report said the scent led to Jennifer's parking spot.
Yeah.
Either way, it was right there at her apartment complex.
Yeah.
They picked up a scent of her.
And to me, which is guesswork, but to me it sounds like somebody walked back and then got in their car and left or something. I don't know. They did find some video footage.
Yeah, they did. And this was the video footage from Huntington on the Green.
Right.
And this shows, we're going to have pictures of this, Dale.
It's crazy as shit.
This is the craziest thing of this whole case.
It's basically the only piece of evidence they have.
Exactly. And there's so many unknowns to this case, but they have still images of a person who dropped Jennifer's car off at the Huntington on the Green. And we've heard this before, but this has got to be the luckiest person alive. They need to buy the lottery ticket. Yeah. Because you have to look at the pictures, and we'll post pictures of this. But
well, it's actually a video, but the camera only took shots every few seconds.
Every 3 seconds.
Yeah, it wasn't like a full flow of video, so go ahead.
Yeah, it took photographs every 3 seconds.
Got to remember, this is 2006, and this is analog tape. So
yeah, and it shows a image of a person, but every time the photo is snapped, their face is hidden behind a fence post.
Right. Well, the video shows the car coming in, and the car pulling into the parking spot, her car.
Yep.
And then backing up a little bit and straightening up a little bit. And then I think he sits in the car approximately 32 seconds.
I'm sure he's wiping it down.
Yeah, that's what I was fixing to say. And then he gets out of the car, and then this wall, he walks by, and it's a pool gate. Mm-hmm. And it's like the fence, like the spindles are, you know, there's like thin ones, and then you have the thicker poles, you know, in between all the thin ones, the main poles.
Yep.
And goes around the pool, and he just gets out of the car and then nonchalant just walks off, never looks back. But damn, what'd you say, 3 seconds?
Every three seconds,
his face is behind one of those big poles.
Those big, thick poles.
It's the damnedest thing you ever seen.
Yep. Yep. He's got to be lucky. And they even got NASA involved to try to be able to
clear it up a little bit.
Clear it up, and they have no clue.
Right. And they said that, this tape was really is an older tape, and it's, well, like I said, analog, so they would probably just tape over it and tape over it and tape over it. So the grainy quality is not going to get any better than what they had.
And it looks like a black and white image.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
But the image of the person looks like they have a bun in the back of their head, you know, like their hair pulled up.
Right.
And I look at it sometimes, and it almost looks like a female, and sometimes it you know, it looks like a male from the clothes they're wearing, like a worker's uniform type right. thing.
And it could be a bun, or it could be a ponytail pulled up, could be a hat. It's hard to tell because you can't see much of the head at all.
Yeah. So, but that's really the only thing that, if they got anything else, they're not sharing it.
No, and, you know, all they got, the forensic examination of the car, all they got was one latent print and a small DNA fiber, and that was it.
Yeah. And it hadn't matched up to anybody.
And get this done. They didn't process the apartment at all.
No.
And they haven't to this day. So they never did process the apartment for anything.
And they let the car go back because it was under lease.
Yeah. So they can't, I don't know.
Yeah. They should have bought that car.
Right.
And kept it indefinitely. And kept that apartment.
Yeah, so they can't go in back and redo anything with new technology or anything because the car is gone. There's no telling where it is.
No. No, nothing at all.
Yeah, they didn't find anything in the car, you know, her phone or her iPod or keys, all that stuff. Nothing. I mean, nothing's ever been found.
No.
Now, it is kind of weird that they said that they couldn't ping the cell phone. They said they got some weird pings the night before, but they were saying that the phone, they thought the phones had been powered down and the batteries taken out.
That's what they said, yeah.
Now, how in the hell do they know that? Because that bugs me.
Yeah.
I mean, is there, I don't understand.
The 2006 technology. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and then you could take the batteries out.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I remember having one I could take the batteries out.
But I don't know how they would know.
Yeah.
You know, and they said that it did ping the night before, but it was off of a weird tower. And then they turned around and said, well, maybe it wasn't. I don't know. There was some confusion to me on this ping and stuff. But they kept going back to saying that the phones, the one Logan's friend left and hers, both had been powered off and the batteries taken out.
Yep.
But I don't know how they know that. I almost want to call bullshit on that one.
Yeah, I don't know. Now, just keep in mind, too, that like we said earlier, there were a lot of illegal aliens working in this apartment complex, remodeling and building and doing construction work there. And Jennifer even reported saying to her mom and dad that she'd be out on the phone talking to her parents or, you know, or just walking back to her apartment, and she would get catcalls.
Yeah.
You know, they would holler at her, whistle at her.
They'd just all stop working and watch.
Yeah.
Really creeping her out.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's awful. You have to put up with that in your own home.
Yeah. Yeah, that's not good at all.
And it was also said that the apartment right across from hers was occupied by some of these workers.
Mm-hmm.
Up to 10 at one time, I heard.
Yeah.
Now, who knows, but.
Yeah, they said they were watching her. But I think Jennifer's boyfriend, Rob, was ruled out as a suspect right away because he had an alibi. He was at work.
Yeah, in a long way away.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
And Jennifer's ex-boyfriend, the one that was friend with Logan, his name was Matt, he was ruled out too.
Well, he's still kind of, to me, I don't know, because they're saying that the night that she disappeared, he was at the Blue Martini, which was a bar right across the street from where her condos is.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they said he was really drunk, so I don't know that he could have done anything, but he lived over 30 minutes away, so mm-hmm. I don't know why he would be there partying. I mean, I did hear that that's a really popular bar, so maybe that's why, but you know how drunks and exes go, and so usually
they don't mix too well.
But yeah, I don't really think he is a keen suspect, you know, but I guess there's a possibility there.
Yeah,
I don't know what they could have done.
And they did do polygraph tests on several people, and Jennifer's brother Logan took a polygraph test.
Yeah, I think the boyfriend actually offered up one, but they didn't take it.
No, even Jennifer's dad offered to take up one just to, you know, clear him so they can focus on other things. Right. You know, even though they were, you know, many, many miles away, just to move the process forward.
Right.
Now, police announced in a news conference that a person of interest, this was on February the 21st, 2006, between 5'3" and 5'5", this is the person that was in the photograph.
Yeah.
Walking through the pool area.
Right. So the FBI had came in and they'd done a lot of experiments by having people walk that same stretch of ground there and using people of different heights and measuring them against with the poles and the
the same gait and the same
brush and the backgrounds and stuff, and yeah. trying to figure out kind of how, at least how tall he was. So yeah. that's where they get these numbers from. What did you say, 5'3 to 5'5, they thought.
Yeah, and they're still not specifying a gender because the information in the photographs is not specific enough.
Right. And then again, her dad did say somewhere else that the 5'3 to 5'5 could actually be off, that other people had said as much as 5'11.
Yeah.
So we're looking between 5 and 6 feet now. So
that could be anybody.
Yeah.
Yeah. And who's to say he wasn't in, or that person wasn't in disguise or had something on, or
right. And, you know, so the clothes is baggy and it looks kind of like something somebody would wear if they were a painter or a drywall, you know. But I think her mother said that they talked about that, and then saying that since that tape was so bad that it really bleached out almost what anybody was wearing. So
mm-hmm.
it's really kind of hard to tell if he actually was wearing something like it was white, like a painter's uniform or something. But kind of looks like it to me in the picture. But
yeah.
You know, I don't know how bleached out it can make anything, but you can tell that his shirt is actually lighter than his pants, and he's got, looks like, black shoes on, but some pretty big feet.
Yeah, it looked like it was large feet.
Yeah.
Now, just a little bit about Jennifer. She did have a four-leaf clover tattoo on her left hip, which is about the size of a quarter. They released this photograph of her tattoo on April 3rd, 2008. And a photograph of a brown purse that she believed to be carrying when she was abducted.
So this is 2 years later.
This was up 2 years later.
Now, May of 2007, you know, the guy that owned the company where she worked offered up $1 million reward.
Yeah, David Siegel.
Yeah, and, you know, that was leading to her whereabouts, but she had to be alive.
Yeah.
The stipulation for you to get the $1 million.
Yeah, but nothing never came of that.
Nope.
Nothing.
So really, this whole story, you know, from the time she got home, went to work, came home, well, the time she left work, really, is the last we know.
Yep.
And then to find the car and see the video, that's not much help at all. And that's about the whole extent of everything we know, isn't it?
Yep, that's it. There's so much, you can go down so many rabbit holes on this thing.
Yeah.
And there's so many theories. But that's pretty much it.
I think there was one or two guys at work that was interested in her, and she didn't want to have nothing to do with work, dating anybody at work, and even had asked her dad about what to do, and he told her, you know, just to have lunch with him at work and explained it. You just don't do this.
Yeah.
And then, plus the guy was married, but he was still trying to pursue her.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just another apple on the card, I guess, as far as who it could have been. Because I did hear that this company had some warehouses somewhere around that other those other condos.
Mm-hmm.
Or I guess they weren't condos, were they?
They were apartments. Huntington on the Green.
Huntington on the Green. That's what I mean. Yeah. So I guess you can make up your own hit list as far as who's on it and who ain't. But to me, my money's on the construction guys.
Yeah, that's what I would say. And Jennifer's parents, I mean, Drew and Joyce, they are so involved with finding out what happened to her daughter, where she's at. They have a Facebook page, Find Jennifer Kessie. They have a Twitter page, and they are constantly posting stuff on there.
Yes.
Keeping it up to date. They are adamant to find out what happened to their daughter.
Yeah, and I think Drew's pretty much, he's come to terms that he don't think she's with us anymore, but he still wants to bring her home.
Yeah.
You know, and I just heard him say that in a press conference, and he goes, I'm sure some of my family don't want to hear this, but I'm pretty content with believing this, but I still want to bring my girl home.
Yeah. And I think the last search for Jennifer took place in February of 2014, but the investigators continue to receive and pursue leads all the time.
And I think now, finally, didn't they, they sued the Orlando Police Department, right?
They did.
And because they kept trying to get them to turn it into a cold case because they wouldn't release any information.
So they could get all the files.
Yeah. And they said, you know, there's a lot of help, you know, now for cold cases and stuff. And they wanted the files and want to go through stuff because mm-hmm. they wouldn't tell them anything. And I think they finally got a new sheriff in, and he agreed.
New sheriff in town.
And what they basically had to say that, then, okay, we're done with it. You have to say, you know, that the sheriff's department's done with it, and you have to pay, what was it? It was a lot of money for a
ton of money
for the copying of the papers.
Yeah,
but they do, and then I think they hired their own detectives after that.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot going on, and then there's nothing we know about anything. There's a whole lot of
theories.
Yeah,
I mean, human trafficking, workplace relationships, like we talked about.
Right.
I mean, there's so many rabbit holes you can go down, and we could go down them, but they're just all theories.
Yeah, and that's just, we just wanted to give basically the gist of it, and keep her name in the news, and it's coming up on her anniversary, and we just wish they could find her, yeah. Find some answers.
Exactly.
And there's plenty of places you can go if you want to. You can dig as deep as you want to dig on this one.
Yeah, there's a lot of information on Jennifer Kesey,
except for where she is.
Exactly.
Which is pretty sad.
Yep. All right, Dale.
All right, man.
We're going to get out of here.
Well, that's one down for the year, and a lot more to go. We'll pick up from here. This is a pretty good one. We just wanted to get this one out in time for the anniversary, and next week we'll hit on something different.
That's it. Might hit on a local case.
Yeah.
All right. We're going to get out of here.
All right, bro.
We want everyone to be safe, be careful, and always be aware of your surroundings.
Because the next episode could be about you.
This is the Crack House Chronicles.